Dear listeners, I'm Lauren Conlon, and before you embark on this investigative journey with me, I want to offer a sincere word of my acknowledgement and gratitude. When I, as the host, first set out on this path, I was admittedly very green. I lacked the seasoned expertise and finesse that comes with experience in investigative podcasting and reporting. However, every story has a beginning and an ending, and this podcast represents the start of my own investigative odyssey. So as you dive into these episodes, you may notice rough edges or moments where my inexperience shines through, but please know that every stumble and misstep has been a crucial part of my learning process, and I've embraced each challenge as an opportunity for growth and improvement. So I want to express my heartfelt appreciation to each and every one of you who has stuck with the story despite my imperfections, because Grant's story is important. So your support and patience have been invaluable as I've navigated the complexities of investigative podcasting. And your feedback, whether constructive criticism, words of encouragement, or maybe something that wasn't so nice, has helped me and helped shape this podcast into what it is today. So without further ado, here is Corruption: What Happened to Grant Solomon.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Corruption: What Happened to Grant Solomon. I'm your host, Lauren Conlon, and I know that this podcast, I announced last week that it would be moving to once a month, so the next episode of Corruption will be in June, but for right now, I want to play 2 episodes of the Outlier podcast, which is my other podcast. I did 2 episodes on a missing persons case, also out of Tennessee, Jennifer and Adriana Wicks. And in the second episode, I was able to interview Jennifer's sister, Casey. So I thought that perhaps this audience might find those 2 episodes interesting. So I'm going to play those back to back, and then you can look forward to another episode of Corruption in June. Welcome to the Outlier Podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Conlon. Happy Monday. I hope everyone had a phenomenal weekend. It's Monday, April 22nd, 2024, and I am thrilled to announce that I have hired a researcher and writer. Her name is Celine Carrick, and she was really able to help me out with this episode. So this is the first episode that Celine has worked on, and I'm just so excited to have someone like her on board. So I'm going to throw her socials in the episode notes as well. So big shout out to Celine. Go follow her. Okay, today I am finding myself back in Tennessee. This is the state that I cannot seem to escape. I have discussed Tennessee cases like Grant Solomon, Sebastian Rogers, and briefly Riley Strain, to name a few, on this show. But today, we are going to get into a 20-year missing persons case, Jennifer and Adriana Wicks. Now, on the actual 20-year anniversary of the disappearance of Jennifer and Adriana, which was last month, March of 2024, it had been 20 years, I was emailed by Jennifer's sister, Casey Robinson, and she had asked me to do some investigating and possibly find out some new information when it came to this heartbreaking case. And I said, yes. I mean, at the time I was on vacation with my family for my kids' spring break, but I was like, when I get back, I will absolutely look into this and raise awareness and just let everyone know that this is not a cold case. There are new detectives on this case as of March of 2024. So people out there, they can still help. And I just really feel for Jennifer's family because I cannot imagine how frustrating it's been, even with recognition from Dateline and numerous news reports over the years. There really hasn't been an update or any new evidence or DNA found as to what happened to their two loved ones. So I want to take you through a timeline of important events and some major twists and contradictions throughout the years, ultimately bringing light to this tragic story. Let's take it back to July of 2003. I was actually a high school senior, or I had just finished my senior year, and we are here in Robertson County, Tennessee. Jennifer Wicks is 21 years old at the time, and her baby, Adriana, was almost two. Adriana's dad was out of the picture, and Jennifer was in between jobs and had been living with her aunt, Lisa Fierro, after Jennifer's mom, Kathy, took a job opportunity in Vegas. So Jennifer, she didn't have a car, she didn't have a job, and she actually didn't have her own bank account. She was very heavily reliant on her family and friends to help her, drive her places, etc. And in 2003, it wasn't totally uncommon for people not to have cell phones. So just keep all that in mind as I go through the story. So Jennifer was introduced to a young man in his mid-20s by the name of Joey Benton by her cousin Jeffrey Grayson, or Lisa's son. The two, Jennifer and Joey, were so romantic at first, young and in love, and obviously in the summer, everything is just way more romantic. But after a few short months of dating, Joey really seemed to show his true colors, and he was a bit of a wild card. He was violent. I mean, his family had a violent past, a criminal history, specifically his father, and he was a steelworker for a commercial construction company working for his dad's friend. And Jennifer starts to notice his behavior get a bit erratic sometimes, or he loses his temper very easily, and she spends most of her time at the Benton household, which is very dysfunctional. Joey lives with his mom and his dad. So in the fall of 2003, just a few months after Jennifer and Joey start dating, Jennifer, in a fit of tears, calls her mother from her grandmother's house, and she says, "Joey pulled a gun and threatened to hurt himself, me, and Adriana." And she actually goes as far as to tell her mother, Kathy, who, remember, is living in Vegas at this point, that Joey put the gun in Jennifer's mouth. And Joey's mother, Cindy Benton, she actually drove Jennifer and Adriana to her grandmother's house, which is where she made this distraught call. So I'm thinking in my head, okay, Cindy Benton is starting to notice some of these behavior patterns between the two. And obviously, she's most certainly going to take her son's side from what we know about her, but we'll get to her later. So
Kathy realizes, okay, Jennifer is clearly in an unsafe situation and she needs her mom. So Kathy left her job in Vegas and moved back to Tennessee. And when she moved back to Tennessee, Jennifer and Adriana moved into her finished basement. And at the time, Joey and Jennifer were broken up. But they did the whole break up, get back together. And of course, Jennifer's family was completely against this relationship, knowing what they knew about Joey and how violent he could get. So Joey was not allowed at Kathy's home. On December 21st, 2003, there was a big incident that occurred at Kathy's house. So Jennifer and Joey were spending more and more time together, again, much to the dismay of her family and her friends. And one evening, Jennifer and Joey were returning to Kathy's house to pick up Adriana, who Kathy had been watching, and a bunch of their stuff to take back to the Bentons because it seemed as though Jennifer was ready to move in. But just to give you an idea of the Benton home, I had mentioned he lives with his mom and his dad, and they live in the house, but Joey Benton lived in a barn, and this was next to the house, and it was referred to as the party barn because he was constantly throwing parties, and there was literally no running water or heat in that barn. So it just didn't seem to Jennifer's family that it was a great place for Jennifer or her baby to live. So Jennifer, at this point, is not on great terms with her mother or her sisters, and Joey was not allowed near Kathy's home because of what I'm about to tell you. So, I love to digress, don't I? But okay, back to December 21st, 2003. Jennifer Wicks ended up filing a complaint, a police complaint, against her mom and sister that night. So Jennifer claims that she and Joey, when they got to the home, after about 45 minutes, her mom locked the door when Joey happened to not be in the same room with them, and Adriana wasn't either, to my knowledge. And Kathy basically said, look, you're not leaving this house with him. We don't like him. We don't want you guys together. And then Jennifer alleges that they tried to restrain her on the couch, her mom and sister, and they just ended up hitting her over and over and over again. And it's my understanding that this is her sister Heather, not her sister Casey, who contacted me. So Jennifer alleges, again, they try to restrain her, and Joey hears them from the other room, and he sees that the door is locked, and he comes and he kicks the door down, scaring everyone, everyone's screaming, and then Joey, Jennifer, and Adriana leave. And that is when it is decided Joey is never allowed at Kathy's home, and clearly the relationship between Jennifer and her mother is now strained for the time being. So, as I mentioned, it was December, we have Christmas, then New Year's, and then Adriana's second birthday. And all of these things were celebrated with the Benton family, as that's where Jennifer was living. But I mentioned they were living in a barn, and the barn was starting to get frigid and unlivable even. So shortly after ringing in the 2004 New Year's, they moved into the Bentons' cottage-style house. So Jennifer and Joey shared a room while Adriana had her own room. And over time, Jennifer and Kathy, they began to reconcile their relationship and talking again. And Joey was still banned from being anywhere near Kathy's residence. And it's so crazy. Kathy was very adamant about this, and I don't really blame her. But when Jennifer would bring Adriana to visit Kathy, Joey would drive them and just park on the side of the road and wait. So during this time, about January and February of 2004, Jennifer's family tried to keep their cool. Obviously, they didn't want another police incident or police report to happen again. But they had an intervention with her. They said, look, and they did all of this very, very gently. They said, you guys are not living in a great spot, you and Adriana. I mean, the Benton home, it was known, it was filled with dozens of firearms. This family had weapons. There was immense family tension, and drinking and drugs were always around these bonfire and barn parties. And, you know, being so young, it would make sense that Joey wants to party a lot, but a baby should not be around this type of behavior. And they really wanted her to come back home, but she was just so hesitant to be away from Joey. And again, I had mentioned that his father had a past criminal record, and he does. I mean, we're talking aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a drug possession, drug paraphernalia possession, and I'm not even getting to the worst of it. So let's go to the month of her disappearance, Jennifer's disappearance, which was March of 2004. So Jennifer and her mother's relationship had very much blossomed at this point from January to March. So December was the incident with the police report. They didn't talk for a while, and then things began to get better. So now they're talking just about every day. So on Monday, March 22nd, Kathy had received a call with Jennifer just frantic on the phone. So Adriana wouldn't stop screaming and crying and kept telling her in this baby toddler language that she couldn't pee. It hurt to pee. So when she told the Benton family about the situation, because, you know, she was living with them, she needed to use their car, she needed to use their phone to make any type of appointment or to get to an appointment, they blew her off and they said, oh, yeah, it's just diaper rash. Like, she's just crying about diaper rash, Adriana. And they wouldn't help her or drive her to the hospital. So her mom offered to drive them to the Northwest ER, but Jennifer was just nervous that the Bentons wouldn't like Kathy even stepping on their property because of the way that Kathy had treated Joey in the past. So Jennifer's aunt, Lisa, volunteered to pick them up instead. So at the ER, it turns out that Adriana had an infection that they even thought to be an STD, but it was actually called vaginitis. And this is not common in young children or toddlers. It's a bacteria infection, and it's mainly in sexually active women. But Jennifer wanted a second opinion. She called Adriana's pediatrician, and the pediatrician said the infection could just be from wearing a wet diaper for too long. To this day, Jennifer's mom and her aunt believe that Adriana may have been sexually abused. And I want to point something out. I am skipping ahead, and this is not necessarily an accusation, of course, but the Benton family seemed to dismiss the severity of this rash. They did not seem to want to deal with it. But let's fast forward to March of 2024. Joe Benton Sr., Joey's dad, he is in prison after a March 2024 raid of their property. And people following the case, they had likely assumed that when this raid was going on, because it made the news, that it had something to do with Jennifer and Adriana's disappearance. But law enforcement received some kind of tip about illegal weapons, and they found much more. Joe Benton Sr. was indicted on, quote, unlawfully, feloniously, intentionally, and knowingly having material that included a minor engaging in sexual activity, end quote. So he was indicted and arrested on exploitation of a minor. The material was a 20-year-old photo of a family member, and the documents say that he received the sexual exploitation indictment on March 27th, 2024. And I was like, wait, what? Could Joe Sr. have molested Adriana? Could it have been Adriana in that photo? I mean, 20 years. We just don't know. It's an ongoing investigation, and nothing has been released to the public. Or could it have been Joe Jr. that potentially molested Adriana? Maybe if Joe Jr. or Joey was abused as a kid, he picked up on this behavior? I mean, It's been stated that that happens to victims or survivors of abuse sometimes. They have a very, very convoluted perception of what love is. And this could be way off base. Again, I'm speculating, but it's just something to think about here. Okay, where were we as I digress? Let's go back in time again. Let's go to March 23rd, 2004, after Jennifer took Adriana to the ER and then called the pediatrician. She asks her mom to meet her and Joey at Dollar General so that her mom, Kathy, could give her a homemade tub or jar of what they called butt butter. And butt butter is a homemade ointment that Kathy used on the girls to get rid of diaper rash, and she was hoping that this would help soothe Adriana's tush. But Kathy also noticed that although, you know, she could hear a lot of Adriana crying in the background during this call, she heard a lot of Joey also appearing to bitch at Jennifer, saying that she was using too many minutes on his cell phone, and then Jennifer snapped back with something like, okay, well, you party all the time, you have a problem. And when Kathy was able to finally give Jennifer this butt butter, the cream for Adriana, she was just heartbroken because she could see that this two-year-old was not feeling well. And that just breaks my heart. So what Kathy didn't know was that those were the final moments. That was the last time she'd ever see her granddaughter and her daughter. And as a side note, I don't have medical records for Adriana. I am very curious as to what this child went through, but hopefully more on that if we do a part two. Okay, let's go to the next day, the day after the butt butter. So it's March 24th, 2004. And Kathy receives a call from Jennifer from her bedroom, and Kathy can just hear, yelling in the background. She heard Cindy, Joey's mother, yelling, and Jennifer says, oh yeah, sorry, she's still being all crazy because we got in a fight over Cindy attacking Jennifer on her parenting skills and also stating that Joey should not be given fatherly duties for Adriana because he's not even Adriana's father. So overall, Jennifer also shared with her mom that she thought Cindy and her son Joey had a really weird relationship, and sometimes it felt like Cindy was almost jealous of Jennifer. I guess Jennifer and Joey were trying to sleep train Adriana, and Cindy was just horrified and didn't like the fact that Joey would sometimes go into Adriana's room alone. So Kathy's like, wait, what? This is very, very concerning. And Jennifer also stated more than once that Cindy made her nervous. And look, we've all had our experiences with our boyfriend's mothers or maybe even our mother-in-laws where we believe they have some weird relationship with their son. So I don't think that this is totally out of the ordinary. However, a few things are just weird. I mean, Cindy being jealous of Jennifer, number one, that's weird. And number two, why didn't she want Joey alone in Adriana's room? Was she afraid he was going to do something? Had she caught him doing something earlier? I don't know. So Kathy just doesn't like everything she's hearing that Jennifer is saying. And Kathy says, okay, I would really like to pick you guys up, bring you home, have you stay here for a while. And Jennifer says, no, I'm an adult. I have the situation handled. I will call you tomorrow. And unfortunately, Kathy never received that call. So here we have Thursday, the next day, March 25th. Jennifer and Adriana were at the Benton home while Joey was at work in Franklin, Kentucky, and Cindy was allegedly working an hour away from the house in Sumner County. Sumner County, I know that all you Tennesseans know Sumner County because that is where Grant Solomon tragically passed away, and also it's where Sebastian Rogers disappeared. So Sumner County, I've talked about this, they seem to have a DA who investigates things that he wants to investigate, and when it doesn't support him or his narrative, he seems to just kind of look the other way or wash his hands of it. So I thought that was an interesting piece of information. Joe Benton Sr., his alibi was that he was at an oncologist appointment. But the only thing that has really been confirmed that I know was that Joey was at work. So it seemed as though Jennifer and baby Adriana were alone. But Jennifer had spoken to two family members that day on the phone, one of which was her father, Michael Wicks, at 11 a.m., and he lived in Manchester, Tennessee. So she specifically mentioned to him that she was scared of Cindy Benton. And Michael at this point is like, okay, enough of this. I'm going to have your grandma come and get you. And again, Jennifer says, no, I don't want to. I'm an adult. And plus, Joey's coming home and we're going to go on a picnic when he gets back from work. So Michael Wicks later stated that he heard a woman's voice in the background when he was talking to his daughter around 11 a.m. And Jennifer said something to her like, no, no, I'm talking to my dad on the phone. So maybe Jennifer and Adriana weren't alone. Now, on the job, it was reported that Joey seemed a little bit sporadic and erratic, and he told his coworker and best friend, Jeffrey, who, as you know, is Jennifer's cousin, the one who introduced them to each other, that he has to leave early after getting a random phone call. And no one knows who called him, and he doesn't share it with Jeffrey. And it seems like Jeffrey doesn't care enough at the time because he doesn't ask questions. He just drives him home. And I know me, I would ask a lot of questions. Wait, that's random. Who called you? Why are we leaving? I mean, Jeffrey doesn't seem to be like that. So we'll just leave that there for now. So when Joey gets home, and this is his account, Jennifer has locked herself in their bedroom with Adriana. Now, for what reason, I don't know. Joey claims they are having an argument. But what's interesting here is that at one point during the argument, Jennifer says, I want to move back into the barn. What? That seems really, really odd because she just had her mother offer to come and pick her up and have her live with them. And the living conditions in the barn we've established are absolutely horrible. So if, let's say, this was true, man, I mean, we'd have to assume that she was scared of something or someone in that house, but she didn't want to make it obvious, which is why she would ask to move to the barn. I mean, and that's if we're actually buying Joey Benton's story. I'm not saying we are. I'm just saying if that were true, maybe Jennifer had this whole plan worked out in her head and she didn't want to worry her parents. So from here on out, we really only know Joey's account of this specific situation after this alleged argument on March 25th. So Joey claims after this argument, they broke up. They just broke up, and she wanted Joey to take her to Food Value, a grocery store in Cross Plains, to make a call. Now, can you imagine, by the way, you're yelling at somebody who, you know, has weapons, has guns, and has a horrible temper. You break up and you're like, hey, can you bring me here? And he's just like, yeah, no problem. Okay, cool. So after Jennifer makes this call at Food Value, she then asks Joey to take her to an Exxon gas station, where after he drove to a church parking lot to ensure that they were picked up safely. And according to Joey, a four-door white Mustang pulled up and Jennifer and Adriana got into the car. He said that he left right after and arrived back at his house by 10 p.m. Joey also claimed that Jennifer was intoxicated and her family was a bit confused when they later heard this because Jennifer wasn't one to get drunk, especially when she was taking care of her kid. And that's just the start of some of these head scratchers. So we and the family, and I say we like journalists, we don't have access to full police reports about this case and Joey's statement. And it's because this case, as I mentioned, is considered to be an open investigation. And this is what police had told Jennifer's family initially. And that is why We know it. So technically, Joey was the last one to see Jennifer and Adriana before they disappeared. And this is according to him. So according to him, he was the last one with them. He saw them get in this white four-door Mustang. They drove off, and then Joey alleges that they stopped by the next day to the Benton house. But I will get to that. But first, let's go through some of these red flags and Joey's claims. So Jennifer's aunt, Lisa Fierro, she had called Food Value after hearing Joey's account of what happened, and she spoke with the manager, and the manager stated that he was working that night, and there were two phones in the store, and not one person came in and used either phone the entire night. And when a deputy questioned the cashier that was working the night Jennifer was said to have come in and used the phone, she said that the store locks its doors at 9 o'clock every night. And when she left after her shift, she remembered some Cokes that she'd forgotten in the store, so she went back to get them. And throughout her back and forth, she did not remember ever seeing anyone else in the parking lot. And I don't have that exact timeline. I am working on getting that, but that is very, very weird. And something else that's weird, the whole white Mustang thing. Apparently, that model doesn't exist, a four-door white Mustang. And Joey should know this. He loves cars, and he allegedly owned two Mustangs. His father had confirmed that when Joey was asked to clarify this by a deputy, he went back on his story and said, "Oh, I misspoke. It was a white four-door car. It wasn't a Mustang. I definitely misspoke." How convenient. Now this puts us at Friday, March 26th. No one had spoken to Jennifer, to my knowledge, since the night before. And that's not weird. I mean, I don't talk to my parents every day. We do send a lot of texts on a family thread. But again, phones were very rare back in 2003. And clearly now it's weird if you don't have a phone. No one had spoken to Jennifer for the last few hours or even possibly the night before. So at this point, Joey and Cindy were both at work, and Joe Benton was at some court appearance. As you know, I said he was not exactly a stand-up guy, but it was noted that Joey finished up early at work that day, and he asked a friend and his friend's girlfriend for a ride home, and he was acting so weird, in fact, that his friend's girlfriend actually stated later to police that she was terrified of him and she wanted him out of the car immediately because he was acting so weird. I really wish I was a fly on the wall and I had details as to what he was doing or what he was possibly saying that was making him act so weird. But again, hopefully when I get to a part two, I can find out more. So Joey said that when he returned home, Jennifer and Adriana, they show up in this same white car. And Jennifer wants to pick up some belongings and also ask for the tax refund money that she had deposited in the Benton's bank account. I mentioned that Jennifer didn't have her own bank account, and it would appear that Joey didn't have his own either, because he says something like, "Oh, my parents aren't home, so I can't access it." So Jennifer says, "Okay, no problem. I will come over tomorrow to get the money." So that night, Joey throws a party with two other couples, and one of the people in attendance is Jeffrey, Jennifer's cousin and Joey's friend. And when Jeffrey asks Joey where Jennifer is, Joey says, "Oh, she's at a friend's house." And he later, Joey, leaves a message to Aunt Lisa Fierro to inform her that he has Jennifer's $500 and it's ready to be picked up, but he can't get a hold of Jennifer. And later, Joey and his father show up to Lisa's house to give her the money and tell the family about what had happened with this white car. I want to pause for a minute on a couple things. I mean, it doesn't sound too out of the ordinary for Joey to say, "Oh, she's at a friend's house." but he doesn't actually know who these people are in the white car. So I'm confused as to why he would just kind of brush things off and say, oh yeah, I don't know, she's at a friend's house. Also, I'm interested to know, did they leave this $500 with Aunt Lisa, or did they take it home with them? Because it seems to me that Joe and Joey, they wouldn't drive together and say, here's $500 that you are owed. That seems really weird, right? It's kind of like, okay, Joey will just, you know, take the car and drive over there and drop off the money. It just seems strange they would go together and try to be these stand-up guys unless they were hiding something. Okay, so when Kathy got off work on Friday, and Friday again is March 26th, she tried calling Jennifer. And then she tried calling other people, and nobody was answering. Literally, Jennifer wasn't, none of her daughters were, no one was. So her middle daughter, Heather, is actually finally reachable and says, hey, I got a hold of Joey, and Joey told me everything about the night before with the white car, and he thinks the people in the car are her friends. And Heather says, well, who are these friends? And Joey says, I think they're Jerry and Helga Jackson. So after Heather tells this to Kathy, Kathy reaches out to Jerry and Helga Jackson on Saturday morning and says, hey, have you seen Jennifer? We were told that she's with you and Adriana as well. And then Jerry and Helga Jackson say, wow, something is very wrong if that's what he told you. We haven't seen her specifically since November of 2003. So Kathy is panicked. She reports Jennifer and baby Adriana missing to the Robertson County Sheriff's Department. And when the officer shows up on the Bentons' doorstep to do a walkthrough of the house, the Bentons say, you can't come in without a warrant. So to get this warrant, it took 4 whole days. So if there was foul play involved, as the officers and others suspected, I believe this would absolutely give the perpetrators enough time to dispose of any evidence, come up with a story, and so on. And again, I have not gotten as far as to see who were the responding officers and who the judge was that had to sign off on this warrant, why it would take 4 days. That just seems absolutely crazy, but again, I don't know every single detail. So while the case technically started off as a missing persons case, in actuality, 10 years later, according to the Robertson County Sheriff's Office, it was reclassified in 2013 as a homicide. And they stated, no one, including Joey Benton, has been eliminated as having potential involvement in the disappearance of Jennifer and Adriana Wicks. And according to Officer David L. Gray, he stated he highly suspected that they were murdered. Kathy had been very concerned about Jennifer raising her own child in a place that was filled with firearms and violence and partying. But Officer Gray stated that he was under the impression when they searched the home 4 days after Jennifer and Adriana went missing that there were no weapons in the home during this search. And I was like, are you serious? Okay, it's been 4 days since they had the alert that police were going to come and search the house. Of course, they conveniently hid these weapons. And obviously that's speculation, but come on. I mean, according to family and friends, Joey had once even told Jennifer that he could kill her and Adriana and no one would ever find them. In the months that followed Jennifer and Adriana's disappearance, the Benton property had been searched on 4 separate occasions, and they even had a pond on the property drained and searched. And that reminds me of the Sebastian Rogers case. But a little over a year ago, it was revealed and announced that a new detective had been assigned to Jennifer and Adriana's case. Jennifer's sister, Casey Robinson, stated, "After 19 years as a mother, you lose a little bit of faith
in not just the people who are working on it for you, but the faith and the hope that you will ever get answers. So for my mother to sit beside me the other day and see the spark and their eyes light up like that, that was huge. So let's get back to the somewhat present day. The day after Casey Robinson, Jennifer's sister, reached out to me to cover the case, there was a huge search that made the news of the Bentons' home. And the search warrant, as I mentioned, it had nothing to do with Jennifer and Adriana, but it had to do with Joe Benton Sr. and his exploitation of a minor. And he's arrested, he is in jail right now, and it's so crazy because all of this seemed to be happening at once, his arrest and the new detective, and yeah, so it seemed like progress was being made, but in actuality, I don't necessarily think it was, unless you look at the picture that I mentioned that was 20 years old of a minor, and maybe, just maybe, that is Adriana. But I guess we will see. I mean, there's some threads on Reddit, and they're kind of silly, to be honest, but people are saying, oh, well, there's a lack of urgency in this case because officers and townspeople were protecting the Bentons. And I'm like, I just don't see that being the case because Joe Benton Sr. was arrested and jailed multiple times. Nobody was protecting him then. Why would they protect him over this? I feel like that theory is a little bit far-fetched, but I want to point out that when Kathy called the Robertson County Sheriff's Office on March 27th, 2004, after it had been 1 to 2 days and no one could get a hold of Jennifer and no one had seen her or Adriana, Kathy was upset because the sheriff's office did not get the girl's picture on the 10 o'clock news. She felt like they weren't insistent on finding them. And the deputy had assured her that everything was being done that they could possibly do. This seemed to start the narrative that the police had no urgency in the investigation, but I don't know enough to comment on that just yet. So Sheriff Bill Holt, on the 10-year anniversary of their disappearance, and I hate using the word anniversary for something that's not happy. I guess the 10-year mark is probably better to say. Sheriff Holt strongly believes that some in the community know what happened to Jennifer and Adriana, but have been reluctant to come forward for one reason or another, and he encouraged those in town to help provide answers to give closure to the family. I really don't think that's a helpful quote at all. Oh, you're scared to come forward. Yeah, we'll just come forward and help the family. Cool. I don't think that's helpful. I would say we can protect you. If you have answers, don't be afraid. We will make sure nothing happens to you. Yeah, I mean, I do believe that somebody knows something. And if we can get our hands on some updated police reports, perhaps detailing interviews of Cindy Benton, Joe Benton, etc., I think we'd have a lot more to go on. And the Bentons in the past had provided a theory that baby Adriana was sexually abused by someone that Jennifer knew, and Jennifer let it happen. So Jennifer was scared that she was going to have Adriana taken away, and so she ran off on her own. And her family, they just debunked that so quickly. They were like, okay, well, she was owed $500 from Joey. She didn't have a phone or a job or a car. I mean, come on. Where was she running away to without these resources? And by the way, where was this picnic? Which car were they taking to the picnic? Joey allegedly didn't have the car because he had to get a ride from a friend to get home. And by the way, who called him when he was at work and then wanted to abruptly leave? I mean, so many questions. When they searched the Bentons' household, did they search the basement? I know that sounds crazy, and most of you would be like, of course they most likely searched the basement. Well, I've heard of cases where the basement was not searched, if you can believe that, because the homeowners have said, oh, we don't spend any time down there. Don't worry about it. And where this all took place in Robertson County, it's actually called Cross Plain.
So Cross Plain, Tennessee in 2004 had a population of 1,500 people. And now in 2024, it appears that the population is just under 2,000 people. So doesn't it seem crazy that no one has any knowledge about their disappearance? I mean, people in small towns generally are up in each other's business, and I still cannot believe that to this day, no one has come forward. So the only thing that the family can do and the police can do is keep on searching for them. It's just so important to give families closure. And this family has not once stopped searching for their loved ones. So there is a $20,000 reward offered in this case, and you can remain anonymous. Anyone with information can call the TBI at 1-800-TBI-FIND. And I really do want to do a follow-up episode to this, hopefully with Jennifer's sister, Casey Robinson, because I think we can really go down a rabbit hole and get some solid information and answers out to the public. Okay, everyone, if you like this podcast, don't forget to rate and subscribe on Apple or wherever you listen. And a big thanks to Celine Carrick as well for helping with this episode. I will be back again later this week with another episode. I'm Lauren Conlin. Thanks for listening.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to the Outlier Podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Conlin, and today I have part two of the Jennifer and Adriana Wicks case with an interview with Jennifer's sister, Casey Robinson. So if you missed part one, I would suggest you go back and listen before listening to this because Casey clears up a lot of stuff and it's just very informative. And Casey was 16 years old when Jennifer and Adriana went missing. So she's obviously very active in the search for her sister and niece, even after 20 years. So again, it was just so great to speak to Casey, clear up a few things from the first episode to ensure that we are 100% accurate on the facts. And I want to point out that in the episode notes, you'll find a link for their change.org petition. And that petition demands that police do a thorough search of the Bentons' property. And there's also the link tree for Jennifer and Adriana where there are donation links and other ways to help. So back to the search of the Benton home, one thing that Casey and I speak about is the fact that the March search of the Benton home, which made the news, police cars were everywhere, it was crazy. It was not directly related to Jennifer and Adriana being missing. And I just can't imagine what a gut punch that was for Casey and her family because they heard about this search just like the general public did. So they got very excited thinking that something was happening because of course they would. Why wouldn't they? It's the Benton home. Why else would it be searched? But you will hear all of that on the interview, which, by the way, I kept very raw. It's unedited, so you will hear the pauses from Casey, from myself, the thoughts being formed as we are speaking. And I just really admire Casey. She's very dedicated, tenacious. She's well-spoken. And if you follow their Facebook, which again is in the link tree, you'll see that some of her recent posts on Facebook are pretty interesting. She's like, guys, stay with our family. We are so close. And I'm like, okay. I'm listening. So anyway, I'm going to play our interview. And remember, if you have any info about Jennifer and Adriana, you can contact the TBI at 1-800-TBI-FIND or the Robertson County Sheriff's Office. Okay, everyone. I am here with Casey Robinson, formerly Wicks, Jennifer's sister and Adriana's aunt. Casey, thank you for joining me to clear up so many things that I got wrong and that I am just so curious about.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for doing this for us.
Of course, of course. So I included the fact in the last episode that the case is not cold. And I think this is very important for people to understand. This is not a cold case. There has been a new detective on this case as of 2024. Can you tell us about what's going on with this investigation without hindering anything?
Yeah, so we actually got a new detective. We've had two in the past year that have been newly assigned to our case. So our original detectives that were on the case were on it from the very beginning, since 2004, just kind of like younger guys, not lead detective, but like, yeah. One of the original, like, younger guys, he had our case for 2004 to up until 2 years ago. Then we got assigned a detective. We met with that guy. That guy got promoted inside the sheriff's department. And they're all kind of part of this team. And it's a small sheriff's department, so they all kind of know what's going on with our case. And then probably about 6-7 months ago, after the other guy got promoted, we got another detective. And he's the one on it today. We met him a couple of months ago, even though he had been on it for a while, just trying to get through the holidays and everything. But as far as the case and what's going on with it, the sheriff's department has no new information for us and our case. Of course, there are things that are going on with the Benton family that we believe are possibly involved in Jennifer and Adriana's disappearance. And so we're kind of hopeful that that might tie in somehow and help us in our case. There was something that happened last month in March. There was a search warrant that was executed on their property that was unrelated to our case. Of course, we didn't know that in the beginning.
Oh, you did not. You thought it was totally about, oh, wow. I'm so sorry. That's such a gut punch.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. We just started getting all kinds of like phone calls and messages through social media from people who live in that area and drive by, because it's kind of like a main road in the area. And so I guess they were passing by and we started to get messages. They're like, the SWAT team's there. The sheriff, there's like 30 unmarked cars there. I mean, there were so many, you know, different agencies that were there. So we didn't know, of course, started freaking out. And then we did hear from TBI and the Roberts County Sheriff's Department later that day that it was unrelated to our case. However, what they ended up finding does not really make us feel like it's unrelated.
Okay. And this is, when you talk about the sheriff's office, I just want to confirm this is the Robertson County Sheriff's Office.
Right.
Out of Cross Plains, or it covers Cross Plains.
Yeah. Robertson County Sheriff's Department, they cover, there are smaller, there's like Springfield Police and Cross Plains Police Department. But Robertson County Sheriff's Department is the agency dealing with our case. They're the lead agency.
Okay. And so something that I brought up about this search at the Benton family home, and man, my heart is just breaking for you because I can't imagine having all this hope and then, you know, hearing, otherwise. But what I had thought about is the fact that they found this 20-year-old picture, sexual exploitation of a minor. Would they tell you if that was Adriana.
I don't know the answer to that, Lauren. I don't know if they would, if it had to do with our case. I feel like they would tell us, you know, yes, we found something and please be patient with us. They're pretty good about saying, please be patient with us while we figure this out. So the photo that they found, we haven't confirmed with law enforcement at all. And you know, a lot of the documents and everything have been sealed because it's part of an ongoing investigation. And so you can't, like, where you can request search warrant documents and you can request court documents after the fact, like, we haven't been able to get our hands on those. But some news reporters and whatnot in our area that were able to, you know, utilize their sources that they have at Robertson County, they were able to get a hold of court documents. And so it did say a 20-year-old photo, which is just very coincidental. I guess I don't understand the reason why they're saying how old the photo is. His charges, it's Joe Benton. It's my sister's boyfriend's father who's currently being held, and these charges are against. The charge that he has, it says that it's from this year, January.
Yes.
And so, I mean, my brain just kind of wonders, like, if it's a photo that was uploaded, you know, onto a new hard drive, you know, it's a 20-year-old photo of a minor, but was that person a minor 20 years ago, or is it simply a photo that's 20 years old? I'm not sure. But the court document that the reporter shared with us does say a relative.
So I saw that on a local news article, and I can't recall which one, but I did source it in the last episode. So it's interesting though, because they're telling you it's unrelated to your case, but it possibly could be related to your case, but they can't tell you everything, and which is fine, because there could be a lot more they have to get Joe Benton on, Joe Benton Sr. And so I guess it's, I'm like, you know, I have a million questions that might not even be relevant at this point, but Joe Benton Sr., he was in and out of prison while Jennifer was dating him. You know, I saw his past. He was always going to some kind of court date, you know, on assault or possession or whatever it was. What does he do for a living now?
To my knowledge, so both of their names, my sister's boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, at the time of their disappearance, boyfriend's name was Joey, and then his dad is Joe. So it kind of gets confusing sometimes. Mm-hmm. So the one in jail right now is Joe Sr., and they both kind of have that same past that you're talking about.
Right.
But Joey, her ex-boyfriend, to my knowledge, his occupation is in construction somehow. I know at the time of their disappearance, they worked for his dad's friend. A lot of Joey's friends worked for this guy that his dad was friends with. And it was, they did like steel work. I mean, they would go on, you know, trips out of state and whatnot, like doing like commercial steel work. Right. So I don't know if he still does that or not, but to my knowledge, that's what he does. And then his dad, the one in jail, he's always been into like computers, ironically.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's always been into computers. And then also they had like a sawmill on their property, like logging, you know, where they would create lumber and whatnot out of logs. But then he did the steel work too.
And you, I guess you had not really, you were so young, I guess. You were like, I think what, 14, 15?
16.
Okay. Did you see the Benton family around Jennifer and Adriana at all?
Never. No, the only one that I ever met was Joey, because, you know, he would come over with my sister and Adriana. So.
Right. And did you, what did you think? How was he with your sister? How was he with the baby? Do you recall? Do you remember anything strange?
Like you covered in part one, I mean, we had a pretty traumatic event that happened at our house December 2003. I didn't really know him up until that point. You know, I was young. I mean, I'm 16 years old, but like still the youngest in my family. My mom didn't really share a lot with me. And then we lived in Nevada until the fall of 2003. And then they were broken up during that time. You know, because we moved back after something happened with him and pulling a gun on them and threatening yes. all of them. And so I didn't really get to know him. And so the next time he came around was that traumatic event, December 2003. And then after that, like the next couple of months, like I worked at McDonald's, me and my other sister did, Jennifer's other sister. I'm the baby. I've got a middle sister. Jennifer's the oldest. But we both worked at McDonald's. And so the only time I was ever around him would be whenever he brought Jennifer and Adriana to McDonald's. Adriana would play in the play place. I mean, he wouldn't say much. He would just literally stand there. So it wasn't like personable, wasn't trying to be part of our lives or anything like that. So, I mean, okay. what I thought about him, I didn't really get the chance to think anything about him.
Yeah. And you know, I know that I read part of a police report that was basic. It was Jennifer telling the police about what happened to her through her lens and, you know, protecting her boyfriend, but also kind of trying to throw her family under the bus here. So when I read this, I'm thinking, okay, if you're looking at this from the outside in, what you could gather from it is possibly he was a boyfriend kind of trying to be a knight in shining armor, so to speak. If he hears yes. his girlfriend being punched or held against her will on a couch, he most likely, sure, if he's got that in him, is going to knock a door down. So that right there, I was like, that's interesting. That to me is not necessarily something that could implicate him, except for the fact that he could be violent. I think what really did it for me was the pulling a gun on your sister and possibly Adriana and saying, look, I could kill you and nobody would know, because that right there is incredibly bizarre, not normal, scary. And that just leads me to my question about motive. What do you think his motive was? If he is involved or his family is involved.
Real quick, the gun thing, and before we move back from Vegas, there's no police reports or anything. There was nothing reported at that time, just a phone call and then Jennifer's family's, you know, my mom and her granny and everyone kind of recalling what happened at the time. Yeah. I mean, as far as like what he said or anything like that, we don't have any of those details, just that my sister had said, you know, to his mom, like, get them out of here. Like I could hurt myself or hurt them. So it wasn't necessarily like he pulled a gun pointed at them or just threatened them. It was kind of like, I don't know. It was just like mentally like going through something. I don't know if it was drugs. I don't know what it was, but like pulled a weapon out enough to scare my sister. And then wow. You're absolutely right about the December incident. It could come across like he is being a knight in shining armor. So I'm always devil's advocate. And I mean, to this day, I'm not sure that he had anything to do with it in particular, of the three of them that live there at his parents' house. You know, right. we believe that he, his mom and his dad, they all live there together, or did. We believe that one, if not all of them, know what happened. Now, if Joey's responsible for it, I'm not sure about that. A lot of people that knew him and Jennifer together more than I do anyways said that he really cared about them. He loved them. And that particular time in December would show that. That would be an example of that, to your point. Mm-hmm. Now, on my side of things, it was real traumatic. Someone kicked down our front door and I've never experienced that before. And so, yeah, the violence is there, but is he protecting my sister? Maybe. As far as motive, my niece had been to the hospital earlier that week, potentially had an infection that was, you know, could relate to the charges today, maybe, right. that are going on. Maybe that's motive. We've also been told that his mom just really didn't like my sister, was very jealous of her. She had a really, like, close and odd relationship with her son. A few accounts that my sister had told my mom and her dad, you know, just odd things between his mom and him that, I mean, he was 21 years old, and the things that she would help him do are just not normal. So I don't know if it was like a jealousy thing, something like that. And I just know, you know, my sister and my niece were living there under their roof, wasn't working, could potentially just come across as like someone they didn't want their son to be with. That's their baby. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Things get tense whenever you live with other people who aren't your family. Sometimes they get tense even if they are your family. But I think just like the tension and all the fighting, and then potentially the doctor's appointment. And if my sister said anything about that to, you know, even remotely accuse someone, you know, or she had been talking about wanting to move back into that barn shed thing that they lived in at the time. That was a big thing that supposedly they were fighting about. She wanted to move back into the barn instead of living there with his parents, just because of how they were treating her. And they wouldn't let her. You know, just reading through like all of like this old forum. We had like this old chat room forum called Topics, and his dad would write in there. So I've got a lot of like old things that are coming from his dad. And so he said, we wouldn't let her, we wouldn't let them move. They basically wouldn't let her leave their house is what it sounds like.
And you had mentioned, you know, you were speculating things might be pretty bad if she's trying to move back into the barn, which is cold and has no running water. And that is, that is not, not ideal for a little 2-year-old. I want to just go back really quick to Cindy Benton, Joe Benton, and Joey, and this, the dynamic between everybody, because I tend to, this is how I feel. And again, I don't know enough about, their relationship, certain details, but I tend to agree with you in terms of the fact that Joey might not have been directly responsible, but I also believe he knows what happened. And I believe the answers definitely lie within his parents. I 100% believe that. The thing about the diaper rash when she's screaming and they seem to just dismiss it, that's slightly concerning. I mean, I know I've been there with parents and family members who are like, it's fine because they're older, but this appears to be different. The way that Adriana was violently screaming and being diagnosed with vaginitis is not very common in a 2-year-old. And something else you mentioned was that Cindy worked in Sumner County, and I did not know that it was the hospital until now. And some of the work that I've done on other cases, I think that it will be worth exploring Sumner County, as I've heard from multiple people, that is the county where people go to die. And take that for what it is, but it's something about the number one, the hospital there, if they're found in that area, the hospital actually charges for autopsies. So most people are like, oh no, I don't want one, unless the medical examiner says you have to have one. And it seems to me like that medical examiner doesn't exactly pay attention. I don't know the one that was working 20 years ago. I can find that information out, but that might be something worth exploring. Cause the minute I see Sumner County, I'm like, wow, are you kidding me? This is a little crazy, you know. Sebastian Rogers went missing there. Grant Solomon died there. So it's, it could be something. And then just going back to Joey Benton's story of where he last saw them, can you just take us through that quickly and just the inconsistencies there?
Yeah. So apparently he was at work on Thursday, March 25th, 2004, probably about like 30 minutes away in Franklin, Kentucky from where their house is in Springfield. And he got a call home, a call from home. We don't know who from, if it was my sister, his mom, or his dad. They were the only three that would have been able to call him from there. So he got a call at his work site, and the call was a family emergency. He tells the foreman on the job and my cousin who drove him to work that day.
I'm sorry, Casey, this is a landline, not a cell phone. He's getting a call, a landline.
I don't have confirmation of that. To my knowledge, it is a landline. It is the Benton family home phone.
No. I mean, where Joey got the call. Did they call his at his job, like in a trailer, or his cell phone?
No, cell phone, to my knowledge.
Okay, got it.
So he gets a call And it's someone saying, come home. So he tells the foreman on the job and my cousin, like, I gotta leave, family emergency. So my cousin drives him home and doesn't remember the drive home, the conversation, anything like that, what he sees when he gets there. I mean, it's been 20 years. I don't have the original police statements and reports or anything. Of course, all of that is I can't get to because it's open and active as far as the investigation. But Joey gets home and says Jennifer and Adriana have themselves locked in their room, similar to the phone call that my mom had with them the night before when all the fighting was going on. They were locked in the room. So he says they were locked in their room and then they went for a drive. And on this drive, they decided to break up. And they go back to his parents' house, sit in the driveway, and my sister doesn't want to go back in. He says she refuses to go back in. Again, you have to remember, she didn't want to live there, didn't want to be there. And apparently the whole moving into the barn thing was part of the argument. Like, she was wanting to move or she was going to leave him. And so they decide to break up, and she just says, take me into Cross Plains, which they live. Springfield is a pretty big city. Cross Plains is very small. You looked it up the other day, less than 2,000 people. And especially in 2004, less than that.
Yeah.
But the Springfield Cross Plains line are really close. And so maybe like, I mean, I drove it the other day. It was 13 minutes all the way through to where he says he dropped him off. So she looks at him and just says, take me to Cross Plains. So I guess he's like, all right. So they leave without any of their belongings, drive through Cross Plains, which is just, there's one main road, one blinking red light, one grocery store, you know, just very, very small. So they are going to pass the grocery store. I guess she says, pull up in there. She gets out, he says, and goes in for a couple seconds, comes back out. He assumes to make a phone call or make plans for whoever to pick her up at the gas station. So then he drives them to the gas station, which on this route, this one highway, my aunt lives on that highway. They would have already passed it, leaving his house to go into Cross Plains. And then from the grocery store to the Exxon, they pass our home. Our home is like right on that main highway too. Like not turning off of it. They literally could have pulled up in our driveway and dropped them off, but they didn't. Or he didn't.
Wow.
So he drives them to the Exxon gas station. There's three gas stations here, but this one is like closest, right beside the interstate. It's not there anymore today, but he says he pulls up in the Exxon parking lot, and he drives across the street to this church and sits in the parking lot and waits. And he waits like 10 minutes, and this white car pulls up and pick them up. They get into the back of it, and he doesn't see which way they go. He doesn't see who's driving, how many people are in the car, anything like that. He just waits enough to see that someone picks up to get or pulls up to get them, and then he leaves.
And no cameras at the Exxon. They had already recorded over it by the time police got there the next week to say, do you, that's interesting. I don't know if that's necessarily normal now for them not to have enough footage that they record over.
I don't know about now, but I do know that then it was common to have like a 24-hour like small gas station would have, like, they couldn't afford like really good surveillance, you know, so it would just like record over itself. And you're right, no, by the time law enforcement got there, it had been recorded over. And I don't know exactly when they actually went there to get their statement, but I know in my mom's notes, which is what I'm going off of on basically everything, is all of the note-taking and all of the investigative work that she did. She wrote, I mean, it was a couple of weeks before they even went to question the gas station attendant.
Oh my gosh, that's okay. And this, I guess, takes me back to something that I misspoke on the first episode that I've already addressed, but it did not take police 4 days to get a search warrant. What happened was Jennifer was reported missing on Saturday. I mean, she was an adult. So it, you know, your mom waited a day. She was reported missing on Saturday, but they didn't, police didn't head to the Benton home until Monday. Is that correct?
So the original reporting officer, he went on Saturday when we filed our report. So he went to the Benton house. Joey was there alone. His parents were not there. We don't know where they were that evening, but he answered the door. That's whenever he gave his original statement about the inconsistencies with the car comes up. So if people look in our story, it's the he originally, and it's in the report you saw, he said, kind of fumbled around. He was like, I took her to a friend's house. And then he's like, no, never mind. I dropped her off at the Exxon. And then they asked which one. And he said, I can't remember. Oh, yes, I do. It's this one. And then he said that a white four-door Camaro or Mustang. And then eventually that changed to just a generic white car. But they show up, they get his statement. And that's whenever he says, you know, and they're like, well, we need to come in and check for Jennifer Nadriano's welfare. And he was like, if you want to come in here, you got to come back with a warrant.
So Joey did say that. He said, you got to come back with a warrant.
Yeah. So that was on Saturday, the same day that we reported them missing. Of course, they took our statement, then headed over there to get his to do the walkthrough or the welfare check. And then that's when he said, you need to come back with a warrant. And then that was on Saturday. They actually did go back. Of course, that officer came back to our house and he said, something's wrong. Like there's inconsistencies in the story. He won't let me come in and check for their welfare or whatever. So he was like, something's wrong. So he reported it to his superiors. That's whenever they do the be on the lookout, the BOLO for Jennifer and Adriana, because it's still at this point a runaway or missing persons. Right. And she'll be back, you know, kind of thing is what they were saying. And then they did go to the Benton house the next day and they were allowed to walk through on Sunday. You know, so.
Okay. Just, so he had like a day to figure out what it let's just speculate here. He had a day to possibly get his thoughts together, talk to his parents and say, okay, they are coming back. If something was done, they have to figure out how to. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
I always wonder this, if they did check the basement, if the house had a basement, because you wouldn't believe how many times basements are not checked. It's actually insane. People will say, oh yeah, it's nothing down there. It's just cement. It's just some of our, you know, and then police are like, okay. Do you happen to know?
So the house they lived in was like a ranch style home. I don't believe it had a basement. You know, they just lived like in this little three bed, two bath, like ranch style brick home, all one level. And then of course they were building the house next door at the time. And they hadn't like gotten far in the process. I want to say like foundation work, digging for the septic, like the initial things of building a home was going on at that time.
And do they still own this? This is the same property from, so I'm going to have to look this up. I'll get the exact address and I will, I will discuss, or if they have a basement or not, I will figure that out. And then Joey had also mentioned that after he dropped Jennifer and Adriana off at the gas station, that the next day, Jennifer came back asking for money because she deposited money into his family's account. It was like a tax return or something. And this was interesting to me as well, because Joey didn't seem to have his own bank account at, you know, 20 something years old as well, which, okay. And he had said, no, sorry, my parents aren't home, so I can't give it to you. And she just said, okay. And she left.
Yep.
And that was the last time he saw her.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up, because when everyone talks about Jennifer and Adriana's story in our case, they talk about the gas station story. They talk about the inconsistencies with the car. And, you know, it just seems like, I don't want to say everyone, but like at the time, everyone was believing the gas station story. Oh, she got into this car, right? But then he says that she came back to his house the next day. So that wasn't, the gas station wasn't the last place she was seen. It was there at their home. The next day on Friday. Now, Adriana, he said, was not with her. So I don't understand that part. If it's a story, you know, and it's not the truth, I don't understand why Adriana wouldn't be with her, because that's not common for my sister. Wherever Jennifer was, Adriana was. She wouldn't just leave her randomly somewhere unless it was like a trusted person like my mom. Or
that's what I was going to say. Everything that I've looked at, it's, again, you're talking about a girl, Jennifer here, who doesn't have a job and her only support system is clearly her family and unfortunately the Benton family. So it's not like she has babysitters and daycare at her disposal to be dropping her daughter off. Essentially, Joey also stated that she was intoxicated and, or she seemed intoxicated. And your family was like, wait, what? No, that's your family that parties, not Jennifer, not my family. And then the last thing was that Joey stated that he and his father got the $500 and then drove to these people's houses that they believed that she was at, because Joey had told your cousin, I believe, the night before, or a friend, oh, I think they're at so-and-so's house. But we drove over there and she wasn't there. And we drove over to give her this check because they're such upstanding good Samaritans that they would like to give her the money she's owed. That was another red flag to me where I was like, what?
Yeah, that's always been a red flag to me too, because if she were literally there, according to his story earlier in the day, and she asked for the money and they weren't there to give it to her, she told him, according to him, that, okay, I'll come back tomorrow. And then now they're calling around trying to find her to give it to her. If she said she was coming back tomorrow, why are you calling around looking for her to give it to her? I don't know.
And then the whole leaving, like running away without your $500, that would kind of be important if you are planning to run away, start a new life with your daughter. That money would certainly help. So why would she leave it?
Right.
Yeah, yep. That's very, very concerning. Man, Casey, I am so sorry. I don't know how this, I guess I'm trying to figure out where things went wrong in the investigation that they couldn't get cell phones. They couldn't subpoena cell phones of the Bentons. They couldn't, after Joey's story appeared to be so inconsistent. Additionally, people on Reddit saying that the Benton is they're friends with law enforcement, the Bentons. I don't find that to be necessarily true, because what connections do they have here? You know, they seem to get in trouble all the time, and they're you know, I don't see that happening either.
So my only comments on that are, I agree with you. I can't find the connection there. Not that it doesn't exist, but mm-hmm. I can't find the connection. I think what they're going off of is that pretty much like all the charges that they've had have been dismissed with little to no fees. Like there's been no punishment for the crimes that they're getting caught with. So I think that's what people are getting at. And then also I mentioned that topics forum earlier. I mean, things that I'm reading in there, like it appears, and Joe Benton is making it as though he picks up the phone and calls the investigators on the case to get updates regularly, and they just give him whatever information. He also says that they say things about, like, my mom and Jennifer, like, oh, she'll be back, and she just ran off, and at one point says that they said that my mom lied. They called her a lying bitch. And I don't know if that's true, but those are words of his. He's making it as though he has a friendship and a relationship. And I don't know if that's where those people are getting it from. But it does come off that way.
With the Davidson County Sheriff's Office. Robertson County.
That's okay. Yeah. With the actual lead detectives on our case with those people.
I'm going to guess that's absolute horseshit. He has not been sentenced yet. He is awaiting his trial right now. He's in jail.
Right.
Okay. And when do you know when his trial is?
Right now, I think the next hearing is on June 6th. So there's three different cases that are open right now for him. So there's two hearings on June 6th. So he'll make an appearance for those. And then there's another one on June 10th.
And do you plan on being there for those?
I do. Yes. Great.
Okay.
I'll be there.
Super smart. I think that if you can get some information on this possible photo or, you know, whatever it is. And I'm really, really perplexed about Cindy and Joe Benton here, and everything you said about Cindy and Joey's relationship. I know exactly what you mean by that. And I know exactly, I guess, the way that Jennifer would feel, you know, having this mother who is constantly condescending her. And I remember reading that Joey was actually trying to help sleep train Adriana And Cindy didn't like it because Joey wasn't her actual father. And it seemed like Joey was actually trying a little bit with Adriana. But again, you know, when you have parents like this, and clearly your parents are, I don't want to say controlling, but it would appear that, yeah, they wanted him to live with them at this age, and they wanted it, you know, as an adult male, and they're not Italian living in Brooklyn, which is the norm, I'd say here. And in some, you know what I mean? In some cultures that really is normal, but it just doesn't seem like the case there.
Not where we're from. No, right. Especially in 2004, like it was really common. Like my middle sister, she got married when she was 18. I know people are waiting longer now, but back then it was normal to get married young, to start a family young. And so you would think that, like, if he had this girlfriend he was serious about and a baby that he cared about, you know, according to all of these people, that they would, I don't know, like, accept that. Or even if you don't, like, just let your child decide that for themselves and don't be such a big part. But I think that all of this with the charges that are going on right now and the relationship between him and his mom and potentially other family members, I think that'll all kind of unfold soon with these charges that are pending.
I think so as well. And I know that they don't seem to have the same effect that they used to, but have any of the Bentons taken a polygraph?
Only Joey has taken a polygraph. He took one pretty soon, I think, after the girls disappeared, and he passed. Okay. Which he was set up to take another one. So that was like a regular polygraph. I don't know their technical terms, but like the regular one that you see on TV. And then he was set up to take like the voice analysis, like the voice stress one, and literally like hooked up to the machine and everything at the sheriff's department. And I don't know what happened that day, but he ended up ripping it all off and walking out. He didn't take that one. And then his mom and dad have not taken one, but our private investigator, he has an employee that works for him that was actually going to administer the voice polygraph. He was there, the one hooking it up to him that day. And he says he did not take that one. And law enforcement has told me for the original one that he passed, that they do not believe that the questions asked were questions that were helpful to our case. So I don't know what questions they were, but you would think that they would use that opportunity to ask the right questions. But yeah.
And I'm wondering here if there is a possible way, because you have had new detectives on the case. I mean, just close that file, you know, and start a new one and then give it to your family who's actively working on this every single day with a private investigator and your own resources. That seems to me like I guess putting myself in your shoes or your mom's shoes, I don't know how you guys, I guess, hold it together and you don't march down to the police department and you're like, just give me the file. Give me everything you have right now, because I will do this. Like, I am just so sick of waiting, and I'm so sick of, and obviously that's not the right thing to do. I'm just being emotional. I'm just being emotional, but no, I think that you're right. I think certain things are going to come out when Joe Benton goes to trial, and hopefully we will find out more and you guys will be one step closer. But for now, what can people do if they want to help?
I've been pushing pretty hard on social media. Social media is a big platform and resource today for missing persons cases and homicide cases. And so I've been pushing pretty hard doing that. So I would appreciate anyone sharing anything. Follow our page, Justice for Jennifer and Adriana Wicks. I have TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I have all of them up and I try and post on them pretty regularly. I have a petition going right now and I don't know how well those change.org things do, if they do anything. Like, I know Grant Solomon's has like hundreds of thousands of signatures on it. Like, right now ours has like 4,500 signatures, you know, but I would love to see a lot more signatures on that as petition for a comprehensive search done on the property that they were last seen. Because we've never had that opportunity. That search warrant the other day was not for our case. And search warrants are very specific for whatever they're there to search for. So unless Jennifer Nadriano was just laying there on the floor, like, they can't look for them.
The hard drives, the laptops, especially if he's into computers, Joe Benton Sr., you need all that and you need a warrant. Yeah. Okay. So I'll link those out. Right though. The Grant Solomon one has over 300,000 signatures and,
DA, which is awesome.
Yeah. Well, the DA basically wipes his ass with it, which it's really unfortunate because he doesn't really seem to care. But I think the more signatures, the better, because that just shows that people are paying attention and they agree mm-hmm. with you. And it helps validate right. the fact that, you know, you're not crazy. Like, this right. needs to be done. And this wasn't done. So,
right.
I want to
thank our DA. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, please.
Our DA, he's new. He was elected in this past year. And the DA that was before him was the DA at the time of the girl's disappearance, or shortly after that. There's been two, but he's been the same DA, and he is said to never try a case without a body. And we have this new DA, and we have a meeting this coming Friday with him, and it'll be our first time meeting with him. And so we're hopeful. I know that, they're kind of like a key person as far as search warrants and whatnot. So that's what we're hopeful for, having like these new people in office and the new detective and, you know, new eyes looking at our case file.
Love it.
So yeah, we're hoping with the new DA, we can get somewhere.
And what's the new DA's name?
His name is Robert Nash. Okay. And then the assistant DA is Jason White. He's in Robertson County.
Okay. Well, that's amazing news. That's like pretty much the best news I've heard when it comes to this case. Wow. Oh my gosh. That's this Friday. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Well, best of luck with that. Please keep everybody updated. Like I said, I will put the links in the episode notes, and I want to thank you for your time. And, I just pray for you guys. I pray for peace, and I pray for, that the girls are found, truly.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for doing this and putting our story and our case out there. We appreciate it. Really do.
Okay. That was Casey Robinson. And how exciting for them to get a meeting with the new DA after having the same DA for so many years and nothing was done. So I'm super excited for them. I hope it goes well. And I will try to get an update from Casey. I'm sure she'll post about it as well so we can all see, but sending good vibes there. And again, this whole thing is just so crazy because I really do feel like somebody somewhere knows something and is just not talking. And I mean, that happens a lot. I shouldn't say that it's rare because it definitely happens. But all right, guys, if you like this podcast, don't forget to rate and subscribe on Apple. I appreciate everyone listening. I'm Lauren Conlin. Until next time.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.